Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Say, how's your lawn looking? Mine doesn't look the best, actually. Maybe yours looks better than mine, but you have some turf issues that have cropped up, perhaps? Paul Koch with us now to answer your lawn questions. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison, has a lot of experience with turf. So what turf questions do you have? I hope you'll join in the conversation. You can talk fall fertilization. We can talk weeds. We can talk about all kinds of things. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Paul Koch, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Larry. Great to be here.
Let's talk about, let's talk first about just the lawn situation in general. Give us a, what was the year like for lawns?
Yeah, it's been a tough year for lawns. If you remember back to spring, it was cold. It was cold, it was wet. Those aren't conditions that are real conducive for the turf waking up and growing and forming that dense mat. And then we jump right from cold, wet conditions in the spring to hot and dry conditions in the summer. So when we have those big shifts in temperature, that's tough on the turf. So you mentioned your lawn's not looking real great. Mine's not looking real great either. So it was a tough year. And you know, you kind of think of the conditions that turf grass likes. It kind of likes the same conditions that most of us people like. It likes kind of that 75 degree, low humidity, ample moisture. That's prime for our lawns here in the upper Midwest. And we didn't have a whole lot of conditions that were really conducive for that. Went from too cold and wet right up to too hot and dry. That allowed for a lot of weeds to come in, insect pressure, disease issues. And so a lot of people struggling with their lawns at this point in the year.
Mr. Charlie is evident in my lawn.
Mr. Charlie is everywhere right now.
He's
a very popular guy right now.
He crept right in. Oh, boy. Paul at Fox Point may have something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Paul.
Hi, this is Paul. I have a situation where I have some grass. It seems like it almost grows on the surface where when I'm raking, big chunks of it pull up. And then I also have a situation where I have a very rough lawn in drier times. When I'm mowing the lawn, that lawnmower is literally bouncing along because of the ground sinking.
Sure, Paul. So those are probably, you know, two separate issues. The grass that pulls out when raking, that's we get a lot of questions on that. That's probably not a disease issue or an insect issue. It's most likely a different species of grass. And the one that it probably is rough bluegrass. It's a grass species that looks similar to Kentucky bluegrass, which is the main species of in most of our lawns. But it grows really aggressively on the surface through stolons when things are cool and wet. So it grows really aggressively in the spring and then again in the fall. And it kind of grows out in these radial circular patterns so that when you see them later in the summer, they kind of look like a disease or an insect issue. They're very, very shallow rooted, though. They put all their energy into these stoloniferous growth patterns. And so once we have a hotter and drier period in the summer, they normally die back because of that really shallow root system. And the other factor that oftentimes allows us to identify this rough bluegrass is like you mentioned, it pulls out very easily when raking. A lot of times when people call me on the phone, they say, it seems like I got a toupee that pulls up on the lawn. That's, I don't know why, but toupee comes up all the time when people are asking about this particular grass. And so that's my guess as to what it is. Could be a couple other things, but it's probably this rough bluegrass. There's no, you know, unfortunately, there's no real great way. I can't offer you a product that just kind of that gets rid of it and doesn't harm the lawn itself. So typically, if it's something that people are really want to get rid of, we normally recommend just spraying it out with a non-selective herbicide like a Roundup. And then reseeding those patches. They're oftentimes, but not always, they're oftentimes also a kind of a limier green color in the spring and in the fall when they're growing really aggressively compared to the other grasses. So that can be another indication that it's that rough bluegrass. As far as the uneven lawn, oftentimes that's could be due to a couple issues. Normally, it's the type of soil that's present. Sometimes if it's a really heavy clay soil, it just gets kind of hard in dry conditions, and then it kind of ruts up and becomes uneven. No real great quick, easy recommendations for getting rid of that. You can try kind of pulling a roller behind a lawn tractor if that's something you have access to. Otherwise, you know, a longer term solution would be to apply top dressing of composts to the lawn. Mm-hmm. You can apply kind of a quarter inch, or typically a quarter inch is about as high as we want to go. And then you would rake that compost into the lawn. Over time, it's going to smooth out those surfaces. Side benefit of doing that is that you add organic matter to the soil, you add nutrients to the soil. So yeah. it's really great for the turf health. And over time, it's going to even that lawn out.
Paul, I hope that helps.
Yes, thank you, Paul and Larry. I really appreciate your show.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Well, Kent in Reedstown also has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Kent.
Oh, hi there. I live out in the country, and I tried establishing a no-mow grass, and I probably didn't kill all the weeds, but I did till the ground. I had a landscaper here putting seed out. Spent a lot of money doing it, but then it got away from me. So there's just all kinds of Queen Anne's lace and all this other stuff. And then I've just decided, okay, I'm just going to let it go. And I let it go, and the pollinators are all over the place. And I just think the whole lawn thing is just a waste of gas and killing our pollinators. So that's my experience.
All right. I didn't hear a question in there, but I totally agree. I think lawns make sense in certain situations, and they don't in others. I think that there are many beneficial environmental aspects of lawns in an urban setting. If you get to a rural setting, many of those benefits are lost. And certainly pollinators are one thing that is tough for a turf grass situation to manage appropriately. There has been some research out of the University of Minnesota on bee-friendly lawns. Those are lawns that mostly include clovers, and those clovers will flower and provide pollen sources for bees. So I think, Kent, I agree that pollinators are difficult as far as, something that we can do with a traditional lawn, but there are some more bee-friendly or pollinator-friendly habitats that can be a part of a lawn. It's going to look a little bit different. There's going to be some what others would call weeds in there, but, right, a weed is just a plant out of place. So if you're trying to promote pollinators, you can include some clover into that landscape, still have a mowable landscape that can be enjoyed as a lawn, and also provide some help for pollinators.
Thinking back, and we've talked about this in the past on the show, but clover, that was part of every lawn mix back in the day.
Oh, sure. Back before the synthetic fertilizer industry really existed, you didn't have a way to apply fertilizer. You weren't going to spread manure on your lawn, so you really didn't have a way to apply fertilizers. So including clovers that make their own fertilizer and contribute that to the soil, that was really common up until, right after World War II.
I think it's coming back a little bit, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is coming back. What's being incorporated some is what's called microclover. So it's a different kind of clover. It produces actually smaller leaves. And when we've got some plots out at our research facility, out at the OJ Nor Research Facility on the west side of Madison near University Ridge Golf Course, if you put it in with the microclover seed in with the turfgrass seed, it provides a very nice uniform mixture of the turfgrass plants and the clover. Where I think people don't like, weeds, whatever it is it kind of disrupts the uniformity of it. So if you have a clump of clover here and then you have grass, you have another clump over there, it just kind of disrupts the uniformity. But if you seed it as a clover turf grass mix from the start, it provides a very nice uniform green appearance. And when we've brought out people to the research facility to take a look at it, most of the times it's very very well received, and the side benefit, no fertilization required.
Oh, so it produces as much as the old time clovers.
Yeah, it would produce all the fertilizer that the turf would need.
Oh, man.
So now, its acceptance is, I think, starting to grow a little bit. It hasn't really caught on yet. I know we worked with Lurvy Sod, tried to produce some sod that was a mixture of Kentucky bluegrass and microclover, and he just couldn't sell it, so he stopped producing it. But I think there are definitely some avenues moving forward for incorporating that microclover in and providing a nice green surface that you don't need to fertilize.
Take some more calls here. Arlene in New Berlin, it's your turn. Hi, Arlene.
Hi, Paul. And I'm glad I got a chance to call in. The question I have is, on the southwest corner of my property, I landscaped the ground. The guys took out the grass. I have huge evergreens now. It's over 10 years. And I was thinking of putting wild ginger under because I had this year a variety of Queen's Ansley's, Canadian thistle, and the other garlic mustard. I mean, if you would have seen my backyard and front yard and the hill, there was no way I could keep up with it. I finally had cannabis come out and pull everything out. But I would like to put something underneath the evergreens, low-growing, like wild ginger, is supposed to help keep the garlic mustard and buckthorn and other invasive plants away from shaded areas. Am I right or am I wrong? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah, so I mean, as far as what to put under evergreen trees, it's not going to be a turf. Turfs, there are some turf grass species that are more shade tolerant than others, but there's no turf grass species that is so shade tolerant that it will provide a nice dense cover under an evergreen tree that would keep out other plants. So I don't think this is going to be a situation for a turf grass. You know, traditional evergreen or traditional ground covers are other ones that we recommend for under evergreen. So they could be, you know, a pachysandra or some other type of. Some other type of ground cover is going to be a better situation for here that would be able to keep out those other invasive plants, because you're right, you don't want to be going out and pulling those all year long. But turf is not going to be a good choice for that.
Ginger could work, I think.
I'm not familiar with that particular one, but yeah.
But Arlene, if you're really bent on using ginger, you'd want to take a look at what the labels say about its ability to grow in deep shade. I think it does. Pachysandra is certainly, as you mentioned, is one that certainly would work.
Definitely
work as well. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Thank you so much for calling. Ray in Stevens Point. Hello.
Hi. I was wondering why you're still recommending Roundup after Monsanto has lost several major court cases where they've had to pay millions of dollars out because Roundup has been determined to be a carcinogen.
Yeah, so that's a great question, Ray, and we could go a lot of different directions with that. Roundup is still legal to use. It's still probably the most effective non-selective herbicide that we have available in turf. As far as, you know, other things that we can recommend, we actually just did a demonstration on this at our turf grass field day back in July, looking at other alternative products that are available as far as non-selective control. So another product that is available is Finale. The active ingredient in that is glufosinate. It's another synthetic herbicide, but it is a non-selective, and it's not Roundup. It's not glyphosate. Other products that we tested are some natural or certified organic type products, and these are normally what we call burn down type herbicides. They're heavy salt based products, and what they really do is any part of the plant they come into contact with, they just suck the water out of the leaf blade and provide a quick burn down. One of the major advantages of glyphosate or Roundup is that it moves throughout the plant. So you apply it onto the leaves and it will move down and kill the roots. Most of the organic products all the organic products that I know of on the market today are not synthetic. They don't move within the plant. So they're going to require several follow-up applications. So these include things like acetic acid-based herbicides. If it's under 20% acetic acid, I believe it can be considered organic. Other ones that we tested in our demonstration were Home Plate and Axe. Those are the name of the products. Those are both different fatty acid type products. And again, what they do is they just burn down the products. So what we found is that they worked on grassy or creeping weeds really well for about 2 weeks, and then those plants started to recover. So they're going to take multiple applications to go back out there and provide complete control of those weeds. As far as why we're still making the recommendation, there's been no change in the toxicology. There's been no change from the EPA or other regulatory groups around the world as far as its cancer-causing ability. So until that happens, we're going to continue to make those recommendations. We don't change recommendations based on litigation.
And of course, the other thing is cover it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's certainly mechanical ways and just covering it. There's other ways as far as, you know, besides applying a product to make non-selective weed control.
There you go, Ray. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Paul Koch, our guest today, assistant professor in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison, as we talk all things relating to your lawn. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer, Jane Rotunda, our producer, and you are listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your lawn today here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network, I'm Larry Mueller. My guest, Paul Koch from the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison. I should mention he oversees the Turf Grass Diagnostic Lab and the Turf Grass Fungicide Testing Program at UW as well. Questions for him? A couple of open lines at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Cheryl in Chippewa Falls emailed in a photo of mushrooms growing on her lawn. She's tried digging them out by their roots, and they've returned three times this summer. What can she do? Well, I'm betting Chippewa Falls had a fair amount of water.
Yeah, rain. Yeah. It's typically mushrooms in lawns are always from a lot of moisture, and so I'm sure Chippewa Falls has been a little bit wetter up there than we have down here in Madison the past few weeks, and that's probably where the mushrooms are coming from. It's a pure moisture related issue. Oftentimes, if it's an area of the lawn that there used to be a tree, like if a tree was cut down and removed, there's all that organic material from the old tree in the lawn, and that organic material as it's being decomposed by the mushrooms or by the fungi, they produce the mushrooms. So oftentimes that's one area we normally see more mushrooms than others, but it's a moisture-related issue. There's really no point in trying to dig them out because you're not going to get rid of the entire fungus. That fungus is probably spread throughout the entire soil there. It's just going to produce new mushrooms. A couple of good things. One is that it's very, very rare for lawn mushrooms to be have any toxicity to humans or pets, so that's normally not a concern at all. And two, they don't normally harm the grass at all, so they're not normally an issue with the turf. Sometimes, fungi in the soil that produce those darker green rings, what we call fairy rings, those are very similar. Those can sometimes produce mushrooms, but again, they don't normally do any harm to the lawn. So it's more of an aesthetic. What can you tolerate? Just going in, kind of raking those up every now and then with like a plastic rake, and just getting rid of the fruiting bodies there, the mushrooms, and throwing them off to the side will do. But there's real no good way to eradicate them or remove them, and there's no real need to. They're not going to do any lasting harm to the lawn or to people or pets.
Next year, you might not see a single mushroom on
exactly. Your... All related to the weather pattern. Yep.
David in Oconomowoc, it's your turn. Hi, David.
Hello. I have two kinds of grass in my lawn that I don't want. Now, one was already covered. That's that rough bluegrass. And a question about that is, how long after using Roundup do I reseed it then?
Roundup has a very short residual. You can really, once it dries, gets inside the plant, you can go out there and reseed. So it really... 1 to 3 days after, I would say probably 2 to 3 days after the Roundup is applied, the Roundup will no longer be active. Now, the plant you're trying to get rid of might not be dead yet, but the Roundup is no longer having any impact on any future seeding by that point in time.
The other kind of grass I have, has a bigger, coarser blade with deep roots, and I can't identify that, but... is there anything other than Roundup to deal with something like that?
Well, it depends on what kind of grass it is. So there's a couple possibilities as far as that coarser leaf blade with deeper roots. One possibility is tall fescue. Tall fescue, traditionally over the past 25 years or so, it's kind of been thought of as a weedy type of grass. There has been a lot of improvements in the breeding of tall fescue, and the reason why the turf grass breeders are trying to improve the appearance of tall fescue is that that's actually really an excellent low-input turf grass. It's very drought-tolerant. You don't need to apply as much fertilizer, and it's also relatively shade-tolerant. So the key, what the breeders were focused on, was narrowing the width of that leaf blade so it didn't stick out quite as much, and darkening the color so it meshed better with our lawns and sort of the traditional what people are looking for in their lawn sort of ideal. Now, that doesn't pertain to your situation. There's no real good products that I can recommend as far as selectively removing the tall fescue. There is one called the brand name of the product is called Certainty. We don't normally recommend it just because it can also be relatively phytotoxic to the traditional or the desired species of grasses in the lawn. So that's not normally a good option. The good thing with tall fescue, it doesn't spread laterally. So if you get that clump, you don't have to worry about it coming back and spreading. So normally we recommend either one of two things: mechanical removal, go out and dig out those individual clumps and then reseed with what grass you want in there, or spray those areas out with little spot treatments of a non-selective herbicide and then reseed. But normally just going out, depending on how many clumps there are, going out and just kind of digging those out and you're fine.
There you go, David. Thank you so much for calling. Zach in Bayview, it's your turn. Hi, Zach.
Hey, I need to convert my garden to lawn, sadly. And so I'll probably have stuff in there until the beginning of October, I would guess. So could I seed after that in the fall? And then is there a good way to determine what type of grass is actually out there so I can choose the right seed to match it?
Yeah, that sounds getting a little late.
It's getting late. It's doable. I'd probably, ideally, we're coming up to the ideal time to seed a lawn right around,
September.
Labor Day weekend, first half of September is ideal. So you're getting a little bit, late, still doable though. I'd probably recommend definitely to have a mix that includes perennial ryegrass. Perennial ryegrass is a fast germinator, typically comes up within a week of the seed being down. And so you're going to want something to come up relatively quick. Now, I wouldn't put down a mix with just perennial ryegrass because you want some other attributes. As far as determining what's already present there, you can contact your local extension specialist, or you can submit a sample to our turfgrass diagnostic lab. And Larry, if I can, I'll make a plug for our diagnostic lab right now. And I was going to do it with the previous caller, but forgot. So we do have a turfgrass diagnostic lab, similar to the plant disease diagnostic clinic that's run by Brian Huddleston. So we focus on disease issues, but we also identify any issues that you're having in your turf. That includes grass ID, weed ID, disease ID, insect ID, any sort of issue that you might be having. You can submit a sample to our turfgrass diagnostic lab. So if you want to submit a sample to our lab, we'd be happy to look through the species and tell you what's in there to the best of our ability. All the information for submitting a sample to our lab is at our website, which is tdl.wisc.edu. That's T as in Tom, D as in dog, L as in lab. And all the sample submission instructions can be found on that website. There is a $20 charge for diagnosing homeowner samples. But it's really the best option we have that we can provide as far as how to tell you what's the current species is in your lawn.
So
tdl.wisc.edu, tdl.wisc.edu.
There you go, Zach. Thank you so much for calling. And again, if you stop by your talk to your horticulture agent, extension horticulture agent, or one of the master gardeners, probably could be of a good help too.
Definitely.
In your area.
Definitely.
Thanks again. Joe in Dodgeville, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I have a question on how to get rid of wild morning glory.
Oh, so I'm not a weed scientist. I'm not really familiar with wild morning glories, what exactly those are, to be honest. I can give you an answer as far as the best way to get rid of most perennial weeds in a turf grass lawn, because we're coming up on the best time of year to get rid of perennial weeds, and that is in the fall after the first, maybe the second good hard frost that we've had, and then applying a selective herbicide at that point in time. Why the fall is the best time of year to remove perennial weeds is because, if you think of it, after that first or second hard frost, the plants are starting to get ready for winter, right? The daylight is decreasing. We've had a frost telling the plants, hey, winter's on its way. And they're going to start to send their above ground nutrients and carbohydrates down to the below ground storage structures below. And if you apply an herbicide at that point in time, it's going to take it below ground with it and provide a more complete control of the weeds. So again, I don't know. I'm not familiar with wild morning glories, but for perennial weeds in general, including Creeping Charlie, making an application of a selective herbicide in the fall, depending on where you are in the state, can be anywhere from October 1 to mid-November, right after that first really good hard frost, is the most effective time as far as chemical control of these weeds.
There you go, Joe. Thank you so much for calling. And let's go to Tom in Kewaunee. Tom, hi. What's on your mind?
Hey, just a question here. I have an acre of grass right now that used to be an old barnyard, so it's pretty fertile. And I'm going to eventually be turning into an orchard. but until then, I've been keeping it mowed and everything. And the question that I have for you is, that grass grows about twice as fast as the grass on my normal around my house. Is there any way or anything that I can do to slow that down a bit?
Yeah, it's a good question. One we don't normally get very often. You know, as a quick aside, one of the when the turf grass breeders survey people for what are the attributes they want in the perfect lawn, the two things that always come up are we want it green and we don't have to mow it much, right? So we don't want it growing too quickly. As far as, you know, normally we would say just fertilize less, but that doesn't sound like a very good option for you with the very fertile soil underneath. And you're not going to, at this point, probably rip it out and put in a slower growing grass. There are certain grass species that grow slower, so that's probably not a good option for you. If it is, I would recommend fine fescue species. Those are naturally slower growing turfs that don't grow very fast. I have fine fescue in my lawn, and even in the middle of summer, after we've had a half inch of rain, I don't need to mow that thing any more than, you know, every 3 to 4 weeks. Assuming those are both not options for you, though, Tom, you can actually apply a plant growth regulator. These are products that are mimics of plant hormones, typically gibberellic acid, and you can apply the product, and it will slow the growth down for about depending on how warm it is, for a 2 to 4 week period. So these are products you can purchase, spray in your lawn, and it will slow down the growth rate of the grass. Now, you can't just apply it once. You'll need to apply it, you know, probably, you know, maybe 3 to 4 times throughout the entire summer. But it is a product you can apply to slow down the growth of the grass.
There you go, Tom. Thank you for calling. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Give a call or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Tom in Wanakee emailed. He has a large... He has three large trees in his front yard with west exposure. His lawn, seeded lawn, is 32 years old. The trees are 30 years old and shady. He plans to get clean topsoil and do overseeding this fall. What's the best time to do the overseeding in our area? This is southern Wisconsin. Any recommendations on type of seed and fertilizer to use in that situation?
Well, Tom, it's a great timing of your question. We are approaching prime season for any sort of yard work. I know everybody's always excited in spring to get out there, right? We've been cooped up all winter. Get out there and do work on the lawn. But really, fall is a much better time of year to do work on your lawn. The soil temperatures are warmer. We have more moderate, mild, sunny days and cooler nights. It's a great time of the year to do work in the lawn. As far as recommendations on type of seed and fertilizer to use, sounds like you've got some shade on the site. I'd probably recommend a fine fescue mixture. I probably wouldn't buy, you know, just the if you go to the hardware store and it says shade turf, there's normally fine fescues and ryegrass and even sometimes some of that rough bluegrass that we talked about before. So I typically like to just recommend a mixture of fine fescues. And that's you can see if it's a fine fescue because the first word in the Latin name is festuca, F-E-S-T-U-C-A. So that's what I recommend. Put that in there. I would put down some sort of, you know, like you said, you're going to put down some topsoil, put down some sort of mulch or straw on top of it to retain moisture for that seed. As far as the fertilizer to use, I don't have any specific recommendation. I always like to use Milorganite for when I fertilize my lawn. Because yours is more of a renovation, you might want to use a starter fertilizer, which you'd have to purchase, at a specialty store because it contains phosphorus in it. And in all general lawn fertilizers in the state of Wisconsin, phosphorus is banned from those. So you would need to purchase a specialty starter fertilizer. But I think in your situation, if you're going to put down some nice clean topsoil, put some mulch on top of that, I don't think you need any phosphorus, to be honest, and maybe just go with a heavy dose of Milorganite.
All right, there we go. And let's take another call. Bill in Madison. Hi.
Hi, Larry. I think I was talking to your producer when you were talking about timing for seeding in the Madison area. Is it too late, or when would it be too late?
Definitely not too late at all. It is a great time of the year to seed lawns in the Madison area, and really all throughout the entire state. It's a good time. As far as too late, once you know we start to have those overnight lows consistently in the lower 40s, mid to lower 40s, that's getting to be too late in the year. So for Madison, that's typically the middle to latter part of October is when we're starting to get too late. You can still do it, might work, but if we have kind of an early knock winter, you might have a pretty thin lawn going into the winter.
All right. Thanks, Bill, for calling. Brent in Wausau, your turn. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is, I have a yard that about half of the backyard has gotten overrun by broadleaf grasses and weeds and creeping Charlie, kind of a combination of them. And I'd like to both salvage the other half of the yard and rehabilitate the half that has kind of been overtaken by weeds. And I'm wondering, what's the best way to do that that's pet-friendly?
Yeah, so as far as pet-friendly, I assume that means you don't want to be reliant on, you know, synthetic herbicides. And so there's not a lot of great options. One, I would probably up your fertilizer rate a little bit. One of the best sort of defenses against weeds is to apply a good rate of fertilization, which is normally, depending on the lawn, around 2, maybe 3 pounds of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet per year. And that'll encourage vigorous growth by the turf grass plants to hopefully crowd out some of those weeds. As far as products that are more pet-friendly, that are selective in nature, right? We talked about some of the non-selective herbicides before. Some that are so selective, there's much, much fewer of those that are really available to us in the States right now. One of them is an iron chelate product that's called Fiesta, and it's just an iron sulfate, and all it does is iron sulfate is toxic to basically all plant material, but because of those broadleaf weeds have a wider leaf blade, it's more toxic to the broadleaf weeds than it is to the turf, and over time can kind of cause them to shrivel up, and that provides an opportunity for the turf grass plant to take over those areas. It's also a certified organic product, and it breaks down very, very quickly. That's why it's pet friendly. It doesn't really leave any long term residual in the soil or in the plant. So that's probably the best option for you. It's not going to wipe out the weeds in one application by any means. It's going to require some multiple applications over time, but I think that's probably the best opportunity or the best option for you, Brent.
Thank you very much, Brent, for calling. And Bonnie in Sturgeon Bay, we turn to you next. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, good morning. I've converted my very large garden space into three raised garden beds, and subsequently I have all that fenced-in area of my previous garden that needs something to be done. I wanted to convert it into no-mow lawn, and I don't know what I need to do to prepare that surface first, so I only have no-mow growing.
And what's on it now, Bonnie?
The leftover weeds that haven't been attended. Well, I've mowed the weeds from the old garden space.
Okay.
So you'll want to do something to get rid of those old weeds first. So whether that's, you know, spraying out with a non-selective herbicide or mechanically just kind of scraping them off the top, the more bare and open the site is before you put the lawn seed down, the better lawn seed take you'll have. So getting rid of those weeds, you know, either mechanically or through application of a non-selective herbicide will be important for getting a good take of the no-mow lawn. After you get rid of those old weeds, then, you know, assuming since you had a garden there before, it's a high-quality soil, just smooth that area out. We almost never recommend, you know, applications of a lime or anything like that. Normally, the soil in Wisconsin is just fine as it is for a new lawn. So then you would just seed, hopefully up in your area by the end of the month of September, put some sort of mulch on there on top of the grass seed to help it retain moisture, water it as often as you can. And then no-mow lawns are typically heavy fine fescue mixtures. So those fine fescue lawns are relatively quick germinators. They typically come up within about 7 to 10 days. So you're looking at regular watering for about a 2-2.5 week span until it can kind of stand on its own 2 feet. And then hopefully after that, it's pretty low input, pretty low maintenance.
There you go, Bonnie. Thank you for calling. And Chris in Appleton. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have, in my perennial garden, which is probably 50 feet wide, horsehair. and it seems to be encroaching into the lawn a little bit now. So how do I kill the horsehair?
Unfortunately, Chris, I'm not a weed scientist, so I don't know. I know a lot of the more common weeds that we have in turf grass lawns. I don't know what horsehair is. Most of the weeds that we would see in a perennial garden, after they're mowed several times, they eventually die out. You know, most weeds that are in an agricultural or a native prairie setting don't survive in turf grass situations because we mow them on a regular basis. Only very, very few plants can tolerate that regular mowing. So I don't know what horsehair is, and I can't really offer you any specific recommendations. Mark Renz, who's one of our weed specialists at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, might be a good person to contact. His last name is R-E-N-Z.
R-E-N-Z. Mark Renz, UW-Madison.
Yep.
And you're going to find his email address for sure.
Oh, definitely. If you look up, he's in the Department of Agronomy at UW-Madison.
All right.
And his email, I believe, is mrenz, M-R-E-N-Z, at wisc.edu. But he's on the Department of Agronomy faculty webpage.
There you go, Chris. Thank you very much for calling. And Kristen in Iron Mountain, Michigan, we go to you next. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So this spring, I made a happy discovery. I had four morel mushrooms growing on a south-facing hill on my property. I am very pleased to find them, of course, but I don't know how they got there. And I wanted to know if there was anything I could do to encourage them to come back, hopefully, a little more prolifically in the spring.
Oh, if only we knew. If only we knew. Kristen.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't have any knowledge or experience in propagating mushrooms, so I can't offer anything specific aside from the fact that most mushrooms like things pretty dark and pretty moist.
And morels typically, well, it really, I don't think there's a whole lot of information on how to actually grow morels, because if you could grow morel mushrooms, you could make a lot of money. and so I was thinking as you were talking, Kristen, about my former dentist, Bill Thompson, rest his soul, he passed away a while back. He was telling me once when I was in the chair about one of his clients who called and said, "Hey, I've got some mushrooms in my backyard." Suddenly they appeared. And he went over to see. She invited him over to take a look, and he had a big bushel basket full of morel mushrooms that he was able to pick and take away. And they didn't. And he called the next year to see if they were back, and they were not back. I wish we knew. They tend to die. The morel mushrooms. Elms, dead elm trees, sometimes other dead trees. They will. You'll find them, but as far as encouraging them to come back, if somebody knows, please let me know. Thanks, Kristen. Appreciate your call. Paul Koch, our guest today, assistant professor in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison, talking with him about lawns. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Thank you for listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller with my guest, Paul Koch, assistant professor in the UW-Madison Department of Plant Pathology. We're talking with him about lawns today, and I hope you'll join in. Open lines at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Chris called in recommending rinsing the morels, shaking the spores when you found them, and she has heard this might work. I've tried it in my own lawn, when I've rinsed the morels and I've thrown the water back out in the certain areas of the lawn, and I didn't get anything, but that's not to say it wouldn't work for somebody else, so why not give it a shot? Let's take Paul in Milwaukee next. Paul, hello.
Yes, for the lady who called about getting rid of wild morning glory.
Yeah.
If you search on the internet for UWEX Learning Store bindweed, there's a publication on it.
Ah, learningstore.uwex.edu. Go there and you'll get, I should have thought to mention that, it's probably practically everything you can think of. Is on that site when it comes to plants. I love that site.
Yeah, as an employee of the Division of Extension, that was a bad miss by me. There's a tremendous amount of resources on that Learning Store website.
Yeah. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it. Lyman in McFarland, your turn. Hi, Lyman.
My question involves how short to cut the lawn. I like to cut it with the mower set at its highest setting, which leaves it 4-4.5 inches tall. And then my wife would like, she doesn't like the looks of it, and she would like to cut it down to about 3 inches or so. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, we typically recommend 2.5 to 3.5 inches, depending on the grass species. So 3 inches is a great target as far as the mowing lawn or the mowing height of the lawn. That height allows the turf to really kind of crowd out and shade out some weeds. So it's a really nice sort of natural weed suppression. You go much lower than that, and you increase your input requirements. You're going to need more fertilizer to keep the turf healthy. You're going to need more water to keep the turf healthy. Depending on the grass type you have, sometimes if you go above much above 3 inches, you can get some. You know, the plants kind of lodge and lay over and can actually thin out a little bit over time. If you're not seeing that in your lawn, there's no reason that you can't mow it 4 inches. It's normally more of an aesthetic preference as far as, you know, being up there around 4 inches. Some grasses will lay over a little bit. But yeah, 2.5 to 3.5 inches is our normal range that we recommend with a target of 3 inches. But if your grass looks fine, if you're happy with it at 4 inches, there's nothing that's harming the turf at that height, you know, except for the rare occasion when it kind of lays over. But I think it's anything above 2.5 inches that people are comfortable with, we support.
And I was thinking about my own lawn. I have an electric lawnmower that runs on a cord, mm-hmm. and I have mine cut high at around 3.5 inches, which means I can run over the cord without,
without cutting. An added benefit, yeah.
It's an added benefit for sure.
Yeah, I purchased one of the EasyGo electric mowers that are battery-powered a couple years ago, and they're great. I also keep my lawn at about 3 to 3.5 inches. A lot of benefits to it. The turf is healthy. You don't have to mow it as much. When you're mowing at those lower heights, you're actually stimulating more growth. Anytime you mow a turf, you're stimulating faster growth or faster regrowth. And so when you mow at those lower heights, you have to mow more often as well.
On to Mary in Dodgeville. Hi, Mary.
Hi. We have an infestation of millipedes. Like you wouldn't believe, they are in our grass. We live out in the country. They are in our grass. They are all along the sides of my house. I did have a gentleman come out and spray for them around my house. It really hasn't helped. I've used some boric acid. I've used some wood ash around the base of my entrance in my house. And when my husband mows now, we don't even smell grass. We smell millipedes, you know, and it's... I'm wondering if you can suggest anything at all.
Wow!
Yeah, that's a new one. I've never gotten that question before. There's.
Are you sure they're millipedes?
Yes, I'm sure they're millipedes.
So there's really no, I've never seen any documentation of millipedes harming the lawn, so harming the turf. So I don't think there's anything that the millipedes are doing to harm the turf. As far as how to get rid of the millipedes, that I have no idea on. I'd recommend probably contacting PJ Leash, who's the insect diagnostician here at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in the Department of Entomology. He knows everything that needs to be known about insects and can help you there. But I don't believe that the millipedes are causing any harm to the turf. We get questions, a similar question as far as ants in the lawn, and ants are the same way. Ants don't harm the turf itself. Sometimes their mounds can smother the turf a little bit, but they don't actually harm the turf. And I think millipedes are probably a similar situation where they're probably not harming the turf, but I can't answer why you have so many millipedes or how to get rid of them, unfortunately.
Maybe a question of your mulch. If you have a lot of mulch, that may be the breeding ground for the millipedes. I've never heard of that many millipedes in a lawn, but certainly the UW Insect Diagnostic Lab. Mary, if you send a photo of the insect close up to PJ Leash at the UW Insect Diagnostic Lab, and if you can send a photo along with your question and describe what you've got in your lawn, and just like you did now, he's going to have some answers for you. Pretty much for sure.
Yeah, PJ's office is just around the corner from mine. He's a great guy, and he'll be able to provide some assistance.
Let's take another call. Russ in Appleton, it's your turn. Hi, Russ.
Good morning. Say, I had some trouble. I think I still have some trouble with grubs on the south side of my yard on a hillside, and they've really decimated several areas of grass where they've killed the grass, and as a result, being on the hillside, it's not able to hold vegetation, so I've got erosion. I've had a professional treatment this past year to hopefully eliminate the grubs, and I'm thinking about filling in the voids and then sodding this fall so I can get a jump on the growth as far as the grass. So I was wondering what you thought about that idea.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the grubs in the yard, we didn't see a lot of grubs this year. Once things sort of dried out a little bit there, sort of near the end of the summer, we saw quite a bit of chinch bug damage. And chinch bug damage is oftentimes more severe on kind of a south-facing slope just as conditions dry out. So first, you might want to confirm whether it was actually grubs or it might be a different issue like chinch bugs. And again, you can submit a sample to our turf grass diagnostic lab to help out with that. In any event, the issue now is how do we repair the area? And there's benefits to seeding or sodding. Neither one of them is necessarily better than the other. The nice thing about sodding is it's an instant lawn. Doesn't mean that it's maintenance-free. It still needs irrigation, still needs some additional fertilization. Oftentimes it requires some aerifications to kind of encourage the roots up in the sod layer to incorporate down into the soil underneath, but there is quite a few benefits to sodding. Seeding allows you to have a wider selection of grass species. Sodding is normally straight Kentucky bluegrass, sometimes a mix of bluegrass and tall fescue, but seeding, you can basically choose any grass species you want. And so in this case, on a south-facing slope, a tall fescue or a fine fescue might be a better selection. They're more drought tolerant and might do well in some of those stressful situations. So again, it depends on your situation, how much work you want to put into it, how much money you want to put into it, on whether seeding or sodding is better. Both have positives and both have negatives.
And Russ, thank you so much for calling. You can join in too at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Mike in Caledonia, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
Good. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Yeah, Paul, I have an issue every summer, like mid to late summer, where I have that cobwebby fungus, and then it kills a lot small portions of my grass. And now I'm looking at trying to repair those portions. I was wondering, do I need to just take all the turf out and then start with like soil before I seed to kind of level the area?
Yeah, so this is a question we get all the time, and again, we're going into that nice renovation time of year for your lawn, and it kind of depends on how much grass is there right now and how much repair is needed. If it's just a couple of, it's a little thin or some couple spots, it's probably, you don't need to kill everything or remove everything and start from scratch. But again, if there's just one spindly Charlie Brown Christmas tree of a plant that's kind of hanging in there, you might just want to remove that and start from scratch. One thing that we like to do if you have a thin lawn or if you have kind of patches that are that have died out is rough up the area with a metal rake. Put your seed down, and then on top of that, you could put down, there's a couple different variations of it, but call it like a lawn soil or sort of a lawn mulch. I know at Home Depot, Scott's has a product that's called lawn soil, and you basically you put that down, and you just use a metal rake to kind of rake it in, and it'll settle into the lower areas where the turf isn't there any longer, and it will allow sort of the turf to still grow up through that. So depending on how much turf is still there, that might be a good option for you. But again, if there's not much grass in there, it might be better to just start from scratch.
Yeah, there you go, Mike. Thank you. Linda in Eau Claire, hello.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We live actually just south of Eau Claire. We have very sandy soil, and so our grass struggles. Our neighbor had topsoil brought in and then seeded, and his grass improved, but over time, that topsoil kind of leached through, and his grass is, kind of mediocre again. So I'm just wondering, is there a grass we can plant in very sandy soil that will thrive?
Yeah, definitely. That's an excellent question. When we get, especially from that central sands part of the state, my family has a cabin in Wautoma, very sandy soils, so we have a lot of the same situations. Fine fescues are probably the best option there. Fine fescues are native to the sandy links of Scotland, so kind of think of those situations. And so you plant the fine fescues, does well. It's drought tolerant, doesn't grow very fast, does well in sandy soils. I never really like putting, you know, topsoil on top of a sandy soil because, as you said, it's over time that topsoil is going to kind of run out of gas and no longer provide those benefits. So I would recommend going with a fine fescue mix, seeding that into there, and I think that'll provide you your best opportunity for success there.
And Linda, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Paul Koch is our guest today. He's an assistant professor at the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison. He also oversees the turfgrass diagnostic lab and the turfgrass fungicide testing program at UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest today, Paul Koch. Paul's an assistant professor in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison, knows a lot about lawns, and that's what we're talking with him about today, your lawn and its care of your lawn as well. If you have a question, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Or email at ideas@wpr.org. Wayne in River Falls has been waiting a bit, so let's go to Wayne. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, hello. I was wanting to just get your opinion about frost seeding grass.
Could you clarify what you mean by frost seeding? Is this, so you mean seeding after there's been a frost, or what do you mean?
Well, yeah, that's, I don't know. I've heard of frost seeding. Do you put it down when you expect frost, or right after there has been some frost? Is that a common thing, or you don't know anything about it?
I'm not exactly sure that as far as that terminology. It might be something similar to a dormant seeding. So a dormant seeding is one where we would put the seed down after the growing conditions for the year have ended. So this is typically, you know, depending on your location in the state, could be anywhere between, you know, early November to, you know, early December. For the far southern part of the state. The key with the dormant seeding is you want to put the seed down after the growing conditions for that year have ended, because you don't want some germination right before winter to come. So you would put it down, you know, late in the fall. It would sit kind of in that area throughout the winter. Hopefully there's no soil erosion. And then come spring, it'll germinate at that point in time. So I'm not familiar with the term frost seeding.
I think that's what he's talking
but
about.
But I'm guessing that it's similar to something like dormant seeding. So that's normally what we recommend for dormant seeding. Just make sure that it's after the growing conditions for the year have ended. What you don't want to happen is have that seed germinate before winter, because then it's just going to die during the winter.
Wayne, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. And with dormant seeding, do you get as good a result from dormant seeding?
Nope. You get lower rates of germination of the seed, you know, depending on how much lower. It is going to depend on the turf grass species that you have down there. And there's risk for erosion of the seed away. So normally it's a situation where, you know, you're doing some sort of project. It's just too late in the year to seed and have something come up and be ready to survive the upcoming winter. So you put that seed down at the very end of the year so that you get germination come the spring, shortly after the snow melts.
Thanks, Wayne. Appreciate it. Bethany in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hi. We have a big older crab apple tree with actual crab apples that underneath it, the lawn is, over the last several years in particular, has mostly gone away and turned into a haven for clover, which is pretty in the spring, but then it turns into bare patches and mostly weeds. And this time of year, it's the kind of weeds that I don't know what it is, but it has a spike that vertical, and then the leaves themselves are sort of broader and more rounded, but it's weedy and it's not grass. And I don't know if it's because of the crab apples falling to the ground in the fall and not being completely removed or what.
Okay.
So, first off, the weed that you're seeing there with the spike up, that's probably a common plantain. That's a really common weed that we see in lawns, normally observed in lower fertility areas. Grass oftentimes struggles under trees for numerous reasons. One, there's the shade issue. There's the competition for light. But also the roots of the trees oftentimes compete with the roots of the turf. So there's a couple different reasons why the turf is going to be struggling under there. As far as what to do now about it, I would probably recommend, if you want turf under there, I would recommend something like a lower input turf, like a tall fescue or a fine fescue. Those typically do better under, you know, low fertility situations and shadier situations. If even those turfs don't do very well, they thin out and die over time, then you're probably looking at something like either mulching it out or going with a ground cover.
Yep, and there are a lot of good ground covers that you could consider. And again, there are, if you go to the Learning Star website, you're going to find a publication on ground covers for shady circumstances. That's not the title, but I can't remember the title.
Get the gist, yeah.
But the UW Learning Star, if you just type that in, it's going to come up. Bethany, thank you very much. John in Dunn, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Good morning, Larry. My lawn is being really messed up by either moles or voles. I'm not sure which, but they're just tunneling all over, and they make big mounds of dirt on every place. Is there anything that you know about that get rid of those animals, or that I can put on my grass that would? I don't know.
Are they tunnels? I mean, do they look like long tunnels?
Yep, they're tunnels.
All right, so moles probably.
Yeah, so definitely sounds like you have a mole issue. Voles are normally only a problem in lawns during under snow cover during the winter, so that when the snow melts in the spring, you see these small little burrows up in the surface. Another name for voles are field mice. Those are not normally an issue during the season. They're just normally an issue during the growing season. They're normally an issue during as we come out of winter, especially if we have had a long winter with a long duration of snow cover. Those voles can kind of create these little tunnels and takes a few weeks to recover from that damage. Moles, on the other hand, those are the ones that burrow underground, create these tunnels that can create disruptions in the surface of the lawn and also kind of make these piles of dirt. There's nothing that you're going to spray on the turf that's going to get rid of them or prevent them from coming in. You can try and trap them, or you can try and remove them. We do have a relatively new publication in the Learning Store called Managing Turf Grass Pests in Wisconsin. Its number is A3714, and the final section of that publication details various vertebrate pests, including moles, and it's written by David Drake, who's a sort of an urban wildlife specialist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. So a lot of good information in there on how to deal with some of those types of pests in your lawn.
And again, if you go to the Learning Store, UW Learning Store, is it learningstore.uwex.edu is the site to go to. And, you know, you can just look at it online. It doesn't cost anything, and get some good information there, the latest stuff.
So, yeah, Larry, I just brought up the website. They changed it as they moved it extension as part of UW-Madison. So the website is now learningstore.extension.wisc.edu. So slightly different, because the extension is now under the UW-Madison umbrella as of July 1.
So I learned something myself today on the show. So it's
learningstore.extension.wisc.edu.
Okay, there we go.
All the same great information, just a new website.
And let's go to Sharon next in Oshkosh. Hi, Sharon.
Hello. Our question is, how do you get rid of moss in your lawns? We have a lot in the shaded areas.
That's the issue with why you have the moss in the lawn is moss is a pure product of shade in home lawns. So the moss does not kill the turf. Normally what happens is the lawn will thin out over time because it's in a heavy shaded environment, and the moss will take advantage of those open areas. So things you can do is you can limb up certain trees or try and create some more air movement and some more sunlight to get into that area to help the grass grow, which will eventually allow it to take over those moss areas. Or you can plant something else. You can plant either a more shade-tolerant type of turf grass, like a tall fescue or a fine fescue, or you can go with a shade-tolerant ground cover. But just getting rid of the, trying to get rid of the moss. I mean, I know there's like moss killers you can buy at the garden store. Those aren't going to do anything. The moss is going to come back after the moss killer is worn off.
All right. Does that help you, Sharon?
Sure does. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Bill in Keewaskum. Hello.
Hi there. Got a question on aeration. I had done an aeration and overseed this spring. Is that something I should do again in fall?
So, yeah, I mean, it depends on, again, what you're trying to accomplish. If you want to kind of sort of increase the density of the lawn, fall is probably the best time of year to do that. Aerification is normally a great process. You know, it pokes those holes in the soil, allows oxygen to flow down into the roots, which increases the density and the depth of the turf grass roots, which makes it more tolerant to the various stresses that occur the following summer. So the fall is really probably the best time of year to do that. Right now is an excellent time of year to do that. Anybody that golfs is going to notice their local golf course starting to aerify the putting greens. So right now is a great time of year to do that. And depending on, you know, you can do it twice a year if you want. If you're only going to do it once a year, probably the fall is the best time of year to do that. In addition to the mild soil temps, there's fewer annual weeds that germinate in the fall relative to the spring. So if you think about it, during the spring, if you're poking all those holes, you're making a whole lot of nice little weed germination beds for those annual weeds to germinate. So, but yeah, if you're looking to increase the density of your lawn, or if you have some compacted soil, aerates in the fall is best. And if you want to do it even more, spring is the second best time of the year. We don't normally recommend summer because it's kind of hot, stressful, can actually do more harm to the lawn than good.
And so, and even though he did it in spring, he could still get started on fall.
Definitely.
Do it this fall, and then just next year, if he wants to do it again, do it in fall.
100%.
All right. There you go, Bill. Thank you very much. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Jack in Madison, your turn. Hi, Jack.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I might have missed this if it came up earlier in the show. Maybe you could fill me in quickly. I have a question about jumping worm damage to turf. We've had some issues with them in the garden for the first time this year. But the surprising thing is that they seem to be taking up chunks of turf in the grass part of the yard too. I wonder, do you have any comments on control of those, or have you heard much about this kind of thing?
Yeah, there's a lot of talk lately on it, Jack. I don't know where in Madison you are, but I live on the near west side of Madison, and there's a fair amount of jumping worm activity that we've been noticing. We haven't done a lot of work on this because it's so new. I know PJ Leash with the Insect Diagnostic Lab here at UW has more information on it. I do have some in my lawn actually at my house, and it kind of just these little sort of small, circles, maybe, 1 to 2 inch max diameter. I haven't noticed any long-term damage. It kind of produces little open spots in the lawn, and then it kind of fills in relatively quickly over a couple weeks span. So again, there's no product you're going to apply to help with that. So at this point in time, I don't have any really good recommendations, except for the fact that it doesn't appear to cause any lasting damage to the lawn that I've observed.
I think there is a product that they're working on now that has shown to some effectiveness.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know of any products specific to jumping worm. There are products you can apply that basically will have a broad impact on a number of earthworms, which is not desirable just because of the benefits that earthworms provide. But if there is a new one that's specific to jumping worm, I'm not aware of it. Certainly could be. I don't do a lot of work in this area. That's something that PJ Leash would definitely have more knowledge on than me.
At the Insect Diagnostic Lab, for sure. There you go, Jack. Thank you very much for calling. Joe in Johnson Creek, your turn.
Hi, two quick questions, if you don't mind, please. Seed, I have a bag of seed in my garage now. 2 years, never got around to using it. What's the shelf life? Can it germinate just sitting? Second question is no-mow lawns. I saw pictures, I just Googled it when I heard a lady call and mention that term, never even heard of it. But it doesn't look so great. Like, it just kind of grows over, and the dilemma of that, maybe if something happens, you cut it, it's not going to grow back. So I know there's a lot there. I'll let you answer.
Sure. As far as the first question, as long as that bag of seed is in a cool, dry place, there's no moisture there, moisture that's gotten into near the bottom of the bag, the seed is going to be good for a prolonged period of time. Might not be as effective and as good germination as it was when you first bought it, but it's going to be for the most part fine. Again, as long as it's been stored in a relatively cool, dry environment. Second question. Larry, help me out.
It had to do with no-mow lawns.
Oh, no-mow lawns. So no-mow lawns, there's not a specific, grass species that is a no-mow lawn. A no-mow lawn is just a lawn that you don't mow very often, right? So any lawn can be a no-mow lawn if you don't mow it very often or at all. Most of the ones that are traditionally considered no-mow or low-mow lawns are just fine fescues. And we've talked about fine fescues several times already today. It's a slow-growing turf, so it doesn't it doesn't require mowing very often. And over time, it's just going to kind of create this tall, wispy stand and will typically not require any mowing if you don't want to. But normally, with a no-mow, we still recommend normally mowing it once or twice a year. So then that answers your question right there. You can still mow them. It's just that, and oftentimes it's good to mow them, in the fall or maybe once in the spring to control certain types of weeds. But no-mow lawns are typically just fine fescues that we don't mow very often. So
there you go, Joe. Thank you very much for calling. Vern in Menominee Falls. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Vern.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
I've got a question regarding a rust powder this time of year for the last 3-4 years. And it gets on your shoes, and it's like a rusty powder on the lawnmower and that. And I'm just wondering what that is or what I can do to get rid of it.
Well, Vern, you kind of answered your question all by yourself. The disease that you're talking about there is called rust. And so rust includes several different types of individual species. It's an ancient plant disease. It's a very important disease on a lot of agricultural crops like wheat. The ancient Romans had a rust god, Robigus, that they prayed to help out their wheat crops. So it does occur on turf grass as well. It doesn't overwinter in Wisconsin, so it needs to blow up from the south. It needs to blow up from the Gulf Coast, Texas, Mexico. And that's one reason why we don't normally see it till later in the summer into fall. It's normally more severe on slower growing turf. So this could be turf that's in compacted soils or a little bit droughty or a little bit under-fertilized. And it's not going to kill the turf, or very, very rarely will provide any lasting damage to the turf, cause it to turn a little off color, gets your shoes a little rusty, gets your mower a little rusty. Normally, we recommend putting down a little application of fertilizer, maybe putting down an irrigation cycle or two if it's pretty dry. And normally, the plants grow out of it relatively quickly.
When you're talking about mowing again, what are the new recommendations, or what are the recommendations regarding, I'm sorry, not mowing, fertilizing a lawn?
Yeah, so I mean, traditionally the standard fertilization schedule was kind of a 4-step program. The old Scotts 4-step program. You fertilize somewhere around the holidays. So that was kind of our former recommendation, was to fertilize Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day, and Halloween. What we've kind of changed a little bit, and this is the result of some of my colleagues' research, Dr. Doug Soldat, who's been on the program before, we're kind of recommending you move that last application up to right around, October 1st or the latter part of September. What he found from some of his research is that there's not much of that fertilizer that's being taken up, or less of the fertilizer is being taken up at that winterizer Halloween application. So we recommend moving that application up to when the plant is still growing, can take up that fertilizer late September, early October. And so,
Do it Labor Day?
It depends on, I think 4 applications is probably actually a little bit much for most lawns. So normally we recommend maybe removing either the Labor Day or the 4th of July one. Removing one of those applications, especially if you mulch your clippings on the lawn. Mulching clippings and not removing them, not bagging and removing, that adds about a pound of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet per year. That's a fertilizer application right there. So if you're mulching clippings on your lawn, you really only need 2 or 3 applications of fertilizer max.
All right. There we go, Vern. Thank you very much. John in Boulder Junction. Hello.
Hello. So I have a 6-acre bog with a 1-acre island on it. I have tall, mature pine on the island.
Yep.
What would be the best way to graft that island?
So, John, are you looking for a grass species recommendation or
Yes.
So in that situation, probably a fine fescue. It's going to be tolerate the sandy soils very well, and it's a low input species. Sounds like from the situation, you're not going to want to be out there, fertilizing and mowing all the time. So fine fescues would be the one that I recommend there. Tolerates sandy soils very well.
There you go. Thank you very much. Jeff in New Berlin. Hi.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I've got about 3/4 of an acre property. The backyard is just overrun by Creeping Charlie.
Yep.
And I live next to a farmer who's got a plow. He could till all this under, and that could start to reseed this fall, but I'm wondering if that's a good way to address it or what a better way to get rid of it is. Over half of my backyard is Creeping Charlie.
Yeah, what's probably going to happen is this is probably a relatively shaded environment or maybe a low fertility environment. And so what's probably going to happen is when you till that Creeping Charlie under, you're not going to kill it. You're going to just cut it up into a bunch of little vegetative pieces, and each one of those vegetative pieces can sort of re-sprout and continue to colonize. So you can still do that tilling under, but you'll want to make sure that you choose the proper grass species for that situation. So if it's shady, go with a fine fescue or a tall fescue that will produce a nice dense mat that will prevent some of that recolonization of the Creeping Charlie. A lot of times, you know, when people come to us about how to get rid of Creeping Charlie, they have a shade problem. And so if you can spray that Creeping Charlie with an herbicide all you want, but until you address the underlying problem of the wrong grass species for that shaded environment, you're going to be continually relying on that herbicide year in and year out.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate the call. And Noel in Addison, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I am in the process. I want to take my backyard, take the existing grass out, level it off, and then replant it. Now, one of my concerns is grubs. It's pretty much all sunny, so I have no problem there. It's just how deep should I go? What should I put back on it if I'm going to seed? And it's going to be about quarter acre.
Okay. You know, it sounds like you already have a plan for tearing out the lawn. You don't need to worry about the grubs. Grubs are going to be there regardless. You know, it's not like something you bring in new soil and it's not going to have grubs. The grubs will come in or, you know, the Japanese beetles or the May, June beetles, they'll fly in after a couple of years anyway. So there's no point in worrying about the grubs as far as the renovation. From this, you know, from how you've explained it, it sounds like, you know, you've got plenty of sun back there. So you can either go with a straight mixture of different Kentucky bluegrass cultivars, or if you want a little bit more drought tolerance, you can go with a Kentucky bluegrass tall fescue mixture, which will be a little bit more drought tolerant. The tall fescue adds some drought tolerance to that mixture. So those would be the two different seed mixtures that I would recommend based on your description.
And thanks for calling. Under what circumstances do you recommend thatching in 15 or 20 seconds?
If you have a large thatch layer. And so you can determine what your thatch layer is by sort of cutting a little strip out of your lawn and looking at sort of the interface between the soil surface and the turf grass plant. If there's a lot of big brown stemmy material there, that's a thatch layer. If it's over about a quarter inch, dethatch or aerify.
Otherwise, don't do it.
No need.
On that note, Paul, hey, it's been fun. Thank you so much.
It's been great, Larry. Appreciate the invite.
Yeah, Paul Koch, our guest today, assistant professor in the Department of Plant Pathology at UW-Madison. He oversees the Turfgrass Diagnostic Lab at UW. So it's great to have him with us. We'll get him back and we'll talk with him again. Just taking a look ahead, next week on Garden Talk, we'll talk about native plant gardening. Hope you'll join us for that. And Monday, talk about the fascinating lives of beavers and learn all about the natural history of bees. So that's going to be fun. And in the meantime, you know what? There's lots of fun, interesting things right through the afternoon. So please do stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network.